It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A little after 5 o'clock here on the Fan. We'll check in on the Yankee lineup in a few minutes and try to answer a question that Tiki did ask a week ago. You're really going to start Gerrit Cole with a 2-1 series lead, knowing you got Carlos Rodon for a Game 5? We'll explore it coming up, plus more of your calls at 888-808-1019. And the voice of the New York Mets, the great Howie Rose, will join us at about 5:40. But it is Cinco time.
Cinco de Fivo with Evan and Tiki on the Fan.
Cinco de Fivo is brought to you by Helix Wireless, connecting everything, everywhere. All right, Yankee fans, tonight is a huge night. And again, you can hear all the coverage right here on WFAN with an 8 o'clock first pitch right around there. I'm going to give you the five reasons the Yankees need to end this series tonight. Here we go.
Here we go!
Number five.
Selfishly, so we can all enjoy some family time, the apple picking, pumpkin picking, and college football gambling without stressing all day that there's a game Saturday night.
Amen. Amen. Like, I know how it feels as a Met fan to have a few days where I can just take a deep breath. I think Yankee fans deserve that, too. We deserve a few days to kind of game plan the LCSs and also relax and spend time with our loved ones.
Hell yes. Here we go.
Number four.
Aaron Judge needs to get his head on straight before Monday's game one, and I don't need him slumping with even more pressure in a game five. And if the Yankees escape there, give him a 3-day reset. Right. Let's go.
But he's getting close.
He's getting close. I agree.
Couple to the warning track.
Well, you're right, but if think about it, if they lose tonight, I'm under the assumption Judge has done nothing again. So that's
you may be right.
If he hits a home run or he has 3 or 4 RBIs.
The odds are they're going to have won the game.
Yeah, no, right. I agree. But I do also agree with Tiki that if you look at his at-bats last night, the first at-bat he lined, the shortstop, it went almost to the warning track in the fourth. Like, he's close, man. Like, you could feel it. Aaron Judge is going to wake up soon.
I don't disagree. Here we go.
Number three.
The number three reason the Yankees need to end the series tonight is so Mets fans can remember there's another team in this town that probably is better than them.
Oh, look at that. Fighting words.
Well, last night, I got to be honest, was the first time I got a
look. I mean, who won the Subway Series?
4-0.
Exactly. Yeah, great. Great. Okay, show me where Jamai Jones and J.D. Davis are in Kansas City.
I was about to say the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And Stanton, by the way, our boy Stanton didn't play in any of the four.
That's a good point. Yeah, that first one with Jamai Jones.
Yep.
I don't think I've seen Sean that mad about a Yankees lineup.
I don't think the argument that the Mets are better than the Yankees, which is a stupid argument to have now. Maybe we'll have it in a week and a half. I wouldn't do it based on season series. I would do it based on something Tiki said yesterday. And I was thinking about it all day while I was at Mets Phillies. The Mets have been better than the Phillies for 4 months.
Right.
Yeah. Like, Philly fans today, they're saying, the Mets got hot at the right time. That's not really true.
Nope.
The Mets have been better for 4 months, and you could say the same of Mets-Yankees. Like, the Mets have been a better team for four months. Yeah. This is not a case of a team just getting hot because they haven't just gotten hot. Mm-hmm.
But this is the first weeknight the Yankees have had the space to themselves without the Mets, so I'm very much looking forward to that.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Number two.
And Evan just alluded to this. Nobody, including Carlos Rodon and his family, nobody needs Carlos Rodon pitching a game five.
Yeah, put him in game one.
It's a very scary. It's the opposite of what the Mets dealt with last night. Think about this. The specter was if the Mets lose, they got to go to Philly. They have to face Zach Wheeler, right? It was like the double negative of, wow, they can win, but it's going to be tough. The Yankees sort of have that. Spectre number one, they've been a better road team than home team. Mm-hmm. Spectre number two, wait a second, I got to trust Carlos Rodon? So right. I think it's odd that the Yankees, with a 2-1 lead, even having game five at home, have like the opposite scary specter that the Mets had last night about, boy, we better get this done because we don't want to deal with that.
Could you imagine your wife dragging your pumpkin picking and you're sitting there thinking about Carlos Rodon pitching at Yankees?
Well, no, the challenge will be is if he struggles early, he's going to get booed in his own stadium.
True. That's true, too.
Being honest.
Crazy. All right, here we go.
Number one.
And this is the number one reason the Yankees need to end this series tonight. The end of Bob Costas calling Yankee games, and hopefully forever. I respect Bob's legacy.
Number one?
He gives me, it's the truth, last night crossed on. Remember, I started the series defending Bob Costas calling this. I've had it. I can't take it. The stories are one thing. Not knowing what's going on is another. And I'm hoping that in 2 years, when TBS is back on the AL playoffs, either the Yankees have disappointed us and we don't have to deal with it, or Bob Costas is rode off to retirement.
Are you trying,
Bob, get lost.
Are you trying to tell me you don't like accurate, exciting calls like this?
Line drive, base hit to center field. It was smothered out there. I don't know if it was caught.
It was caught.
Oh, my gosh. What a play. Oh, my gosh.
There are so many things that make me laugh about that. Number one, Bob's surprise, and then Ron.
Oh, my gosh.
And Ron being disgusted.
Yeah.
How about an
oh, my gosh, in the midst of the Mets being oh, my God.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what happened here.
He can't see. That's what happened here.
No, I feel like, because if you're watching the game broadcast, so not actually looking at the field, because I went back and watched this.
Yes.
Just to see, like, how did he screw this up? The game broadcast, it looks like he hits a shot into center field.
It does. No, absolutely.
But if you're from any other angle other than that straight-on camera, you can tell it's just a weakly hit. Not even, like, it's an easy play. It's basically right at Volpe, and it's floating in the air.
Do you remember who hit that ball for the Kansas City Royals?
Antonio Antino.
That's right. Good job, John. Vinny
Pasquantino.
Antonio Antino.
Yeah. They gave him the phonetic reading of it.
I think John was trying to make sure he got it right. You know?
He was reading the phonetic version of it.
You want a factoid about Vinny Pasquantino?
Yes.
Seriously, a real true factoid.
Go ahead.
Diehard Jets fan.
Oh.
Did you know that?
I did not.
And that's another Italian-American that's going to be playing first base for the Yankees in like 3 years from now when Rizzo completely falls apart.
I could see that. I could see that down the road. Let me get to the Rodon thing, and we'll get back to your calls in a few minutes, because this has been like something we've thought about over the last few days when Aaron Boone...
The last week we were thinking about this.
Yeah, because when Aaron announced the rotation at the beginning of the bye week, he said, yeah, Gerrit Cole's going to start game one. We all get it. Carlos Rodon is pitching game two. And because of the way the off days were structured in this series, and I hate it, it's been awful. Game, off day, game, game. In fact, this is the only time the Yankees have played back-to-back days since the last weekend of the baseball season. That was almost 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's not baseball. That's not normal. And I'm not making excuses for teams, but the bye week is not good. Like, I think we just need to address that.
Right.
That's not an excuse for anybody. It's baseball. But that's not normal. This isn't the NFL.
True. And it hurts the Yankees because they weren't playing... They were meaningful games, obviously, because they still had to shore up, won the division, but then ultimately the number one overall seed. But it felt like they were just kind of cruising their way to it. There wasn't an urgency in how they were playing.
I think that the Yankees do have one benefit to the scattered schedule, and they've used it very well in this series, so I don't want to say it's all negative. I think the negativity of the bats and you're out of a rhythm. The positive is how they've used their bullpen.
Yeah.
I mean, their top guys have been able to pitch in every single game without restraint because they don't play back-to-back days.
Yep.
So that's been a positive for them, and obviously the strength of this Yankee team during these three games against Kansas City has been their bullpen. Their bullpen's been incredible. But when they made the announcement, it lined up where you only need three starters, and Gerrit Cole could come back for game four no matter what, and then whoever pitches game two would come back in game five. And what scares me, and scares I think all of us, is that the insurance policy if you lose tonight is Carlos Rodon. And that's why I thought you had a great idea last week. And I know it's very, like, not go for the kill, but it's also really conservative. And that's, you know what, if I have a 2-1 lead, I'll start Luis Gil, who has not been used in this series. I'll hold Gerrit Cole back for a game five. I trust him more than anybody else. And it's a double positive. Like, if I don't need him because we win game four, great, he's set to go for game one of the ALCS, no harm, no foul.
Right.
Now, I think he still is days-wise lined up for game one. Today's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Actually, I'm wrong. He's lined up for game two.
Right.
So he would not even pitch game one. So the benefit would be, if you win, you have him ready for game one. And if you lose, he pitches the winner-take-all game, not a guy who every Yankee fan has to be worried about.
Right, and I think the challenge would be the last start for Gil. Was that the end of September?
Yeah.
Am I seeing that right?
Yes.
Pittsburgh start versus Skeens.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, he got banged around a little bit.
He did not pitch well in his last start. His last two starts, he didn't really pitch that well. He was pitching well before that when he came off the IL.
Yes.
Six scoreless against Chicago and then good performances against Kansas City, of all teams, and Seattle. But you're right, his last two starts were not great. He gave up four home runs in the Pittsburgh game.
Weird day. There was a lot of rain in and out. He kept having to deal with the moisture on his hands. It was not a normal start. I'm not going to crush him.
No, I'm not going to crush him either. And I still trust him more than I wrote Don.
Yeah, but my point is it's been a little bit. Since he started.
It's been a little bit for everybody.
And maybe they will go to Gil in game five. They haven't used him out of the pen yet. Yeah, maybe they would stun us.
But Sean, I get it. Like the Met game plan.
No, I think he would be immediate on Rodon's heels.
Yeah.
I don't think that he's starting game five.
No, he's not starting game five. And I apologize, I said Mets. The Yankees game plan for game five is that Rodon is starting. They have a quick hook because it's an elimination game. And your backup plan is Luis Gil.
Right.
I would rather have Gerrit Cole in that spot. That's all I'm saying, and I get that
too.
Today's his day, and you don't want to screw up his rhythm, and I've made that argument, I don't want to screw up his rhythm, but it makes me anxious as we start this game, that if they don't close it out tonight, I would be very nervous about game five.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, I was Team Tiki on this, and I've said it on the air, I love that Gerrit Cole's starting tonight.
Of course, because he's going to close it out, and you don't have to worry about it. Like we're talking a hypothetical that's not going to ultimately happen.
Right.
The challenge would be, if you started Luis Gil, because Rodon, in theory, is not available. If he struggles, because he struggled these last few games, his last couple starts, I should say, back in the end of September, what are you doing?
You've got Ian Hamilton, you've got Tim Meiser, you've got Jay Cutman. I mean, you have a fresh bullpen. Now, I know those arms aren't great.
That's what I mean, though.
But
you're not putting your best effort forward. Now, if you start Gerrit Cole, it's your best effort forward
absolutely.
To end the series.
Yeah, and they have a great chance to end the series. If they don't, though, I don't know how any Yankee fan is going to tell me they're going to be confident going into Game 5.
No.
You're going to be throwing Carlos Rodon and Luis Gil as his backup plan in a winner-take-all game at a very tense Yankee stadium?
I'll be throwing up all day, but I really have to believe tonight that they're ending this. And I love that I have my ace that's paid a lot of money to go out there, by the way, in a ballpark that's going to be less susceptible to Gerrit Cole typical home runs when he hangs ones. I'm in this tonight. Let's go, Cole.
Now let's get it done. I agree with you. Because I think there's a fear if he doesn't get it done, game five is going to be one of those, you know, you're not enjoying yourself. It's going to be one of those nights, a game five at Yankee Stadium. 888-808-1019. Bob is in Maywood, New Jersey. What's up, Bob?
Hey, thanks, guys. As a Yankee fan, first, congrats to Mets fans for making the playoffs. Good team, great team. And, of course, fellow Yankee fans, my point is regarding the gentleman or the washed-up former announcer, Bob Costas, you mentioned earlier. And it's regarding his insulting, rude comments about the greatest home runner hitter in baseball history, Mr. Aaron Judge, by the way, a great role model and face of baseball with Ohtani, okay?
What did he say?
He's constantly saying during this 24 playoffs, he has not hit one home run or a triple or driving in a couple runs. But as the fan mentioned, his history in the postseason, Aaron Judge has 13 home runs in his postseason history, okay? And a total of 13 home runs. And thank God for Susan Waldman and John Sterling back on the radio. I had to switch to the radio.
Yeah, but wait, I couldn't take him anymore.
Bob,
I respect what you're saying, but Aaron Judge has not been a great postseason player, and that's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can be offended that, well, he's hit 13 home runs in 47 games. And I will defend Aaron Judge with this, and it's very similar to something I said about Pete. Aaron Judge has hit 13 postseason home runs. Some of them have been huge. It's not like he's incapable of getting big hits in the postseason. He's done it before. He can do it again. And if that's your argument, I respect it, and I actually agree with you.
Right.
But the numbers are the numbers. He's played 47 postseason games, and he's a .203 career hitter with a .750 OPS. That's not good. He's in a massive postseason slump going back to the ALCS against the Astros. That's a storyline, and that's real. And Bob Costas is allowed to say that, just like I'm allowed to say it.
Yeah. I mean, he had back-to-back really good postseasons in 18 and 19. And then 20 was it was better than we've seen recently, but it was a big fall off from where he had been, those previous two.
Right.
But and then now, it feels anemic.
He's been anemic recently, but my defense of Pete when Met fans, and they were Met fans, saying he sucks, he never gets a big hit, is they started rewriting history.
Yeah.
Pete Alonso had big hits, and I had to remind people, hey, I don't know if you guys remember, but Pete hit the game-winning home run. It was in the fifth inning. It wasn't the ninth inning, but he hit a game-winning home run in a playoff game where the Mets were facing elimination in 2022. He had many big walk-offs over the course of the regular season. Those are big home runs. I know he's capable of it, and we all know what he did. Well, I got to do this now. I got to do this for Yankee fans. When the Yankees played a winner-take-all Game 5 of the Division Series against Tampa in 2020, it was a low-scoring game. It ended on Aroldis Chapman giving up a home run.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Judge had a home run to give him the lead in the fifth inning of that game.
Right.
Game 5. Is that a big home run? Is that a significant home run?
Yes.
Okay, it is. Okay. So in the first inning of a wild card game, a couple years ago, I think it was the Oakland game, he had a home run. First inning of a wild card game. I mean, it's an elimination game. Is that a big home run?
Yes.
He's capable of it. He just hasn't done it recently. Those two things can be true.
I think they
are. It's very similar to Pete Alonso, quite frankly.
Right.
I don't see much of a difference other than the fact Aaron Judge is a lot better.
Look, I think if you're a Yankee fan that thinks that Aaron Judge has never done it in the postseason, you're being short-sighted, not paying attention. But what have you done for me lately does matter.
I agree.
And that's the big deal. And also, it's not just about him not getting it done. Last night was different. He was hitting the ball on the screws early. Early in the series, and what we saw in 2022 was a guy who just looked either exhausted or pressing and not mentally locked into the at-bats the way he has been in the regular season. And I think that's what's true.
Well, you know what's happening? I got to commend the Royals. It's so weird. They're doing something very, very weird that we're not used to Aaron Judge. And it's a very simple thing. Do you guys know what that is?
No, tell me.
Pitching around him?
No, they're pitching to him.
Yeah.
They're going after
him. They're letting him hit the ball.
Yeah.
And seeing what happens.
Dude, Aaron Judge is being attacked. Like, they are, and I know he's walked a couple of times, so it's not strictly just walks. Watch the at-bats. They're going after him.
Right.
He's also swinging at balls out of the zone, Evan.
Not really.
His strikeouts 2 games ago, I mean, he especially in that first inning, who was it? Was it Reagan's in that game? I'm losing track of which game that was, where he had two runners on. He's not letting them work. He's swinging away right away. He's not working counts.
When he swung at strike one and strike two, they were all in the strike zone. When he swung at strike three and 97 mile an hour,
then TBS's box is wrong.
I'm looking at the game track of the Reagan's at bat in the first inning. He had 3 swing and misses. 2 of them are definitely strikes. 1 of them is borderline. Like it's not like he's swinging at pitches on his eyes or bounce. He's being attacked. And like, I guess I give the Royals credit. I only give him credit until Aaron Judge starts slugging them.
Yes.
Because once Aaron Judge starts to make them pay, the response is going to be, what idiots? Why are you going after Aaron Judge?
Well, I can't even say this because you're still going to revere him. He's still going to be Aaron Judge no matter what happens here. Now, you'll be frustrated by his postseason futility, but if they win the game, who cares?
Well, if they win the game and he's still futile, it buys time. Yes. I've always said this, that
to get hot.
Yeah, I think it's awesome when my best players don't perform and I win anyway.
Yeah.
Because I know my best players are going to be great.
Well, that's kind of how you felt in 22, though. And, you know, they got swept by the Astros.
Well, because it never happened.
Yes.
They weren't winning despite him. And as this goes on, they're going to need him to hit. But, dude, this isn't about, like, trying to be positive. This isn't any, like, I'm going to just make you happy. Aaron Judge is a great player. We all know that. Okay. He's going to be great in the postseason at some point, unless you actually believe. And tell me if you do. I think you're nuts if you believe it, but you can call me up and tell me I'm nuts. Do you actually believe Aaron Judge can't handle this? Like, does anybody actually think that?
No.
You think that the pressure is too much for Aaron freaking Judge?
No, he doesn't seem like he's that kind of emotional player where he lets the moment take over him. He's so steady, and he's been that way through the ups and downs of the regular season. You see him and how he speaks and how he talks, and he's dead-ass serious about some of the things that he says. And it makes a difference in that clubhouse. So I don't think he's negatively impacted by the pressure of the moment at all.
I don't think so for the longevity of his career. Like, I believe he'll have postseason moments or two. But for this specific team, it was the right thing for him to say. If this team fails to win a World Series, it's on me. But him already saying that before the postseason even started, you can't tell me part of that's not in his head with every single at-bat.
I don't think it is.
Right.
And he's, I know that's telling himself, because I can't fail, and it feels to me,
like if Garrett Cole said that exact same thing, what would you say?
Does Garrett Cole get lit up in, for two innings and gives it up? I'd say he's in his head.
I can't say that because Garrett Cole is just, he's Garrett Cole. Whether he gives up three home runs or strikes out seven.
He's approaching everything
real quick, the exact same way.
Before you guys continue, I just want to remind the TV audience, Baseball Night in New York is coming up, presented by Tri-State Cadillac on SNY. That's actually coming up at 6 o'clock, but coming up next is Jets Game Plan on SNY, you'll get Baseball Night in New York.
Yeah, they got some stuff to talk about.
They got a few things to talk about, yes. I apologize. Continue on.
So my point is, just like Garrett Cole, Aaron Judge is so focused on being who he is, his process doesn't change because he's struggling. And, you know, maybe advanced analytics of his swing would tell you otherwise, but I don't see that. And, you know, it doesn't feel that way because he is hitting solid contact. It's just he's not putting them out of the ballpark.
I also think that, you know, it's different nowadays because making the playoffs is a lot more makeable than it used to be, right? Yeah. It used to be very tough to make the playoffs. And so your opportunities in the postseason may be limited, as we've seen from great players like Ted Williams, where, yeah, you got your one shot. But in this day and age, you can make the playoffs a lot. And here's what I really believe, and I think the dynasty Yankees prove this. If you're in the playoffs a lot, you know what you end up doing in the postseason? You end up basically doing what you do in the regular season. Mm. You are who you are. Andy Pettit is always the guy I love to use as an example. Because Andy Pettit had this brilliant 18-year career. You know, he won 256 games and had a 3.85 ERA. 3.85 ERA. I just want you to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
3.85 ERA. What was his career ERA?
3.85.
Okay. He made 44 starts in the postseason, which is absurd, right? Because he was there all the time. You know what his career ERA in the postseason was? 3.81. Basically the same.
Yeah.
Why, you ask? Because you are who you are. And if you judge it in a small sample size, it may make you look better than you are or worse than you are.
But how big is the sample size do we need from Aaron Judge? He's current batting average is 203. Like, he feels like he's a 300 hitter for his career.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to trend to be. It's not making that up.
He's not making that up. Okay, so let's answer that question. He's played 47 games.
47.
That would be the equivalent of the middle of May.
Mm.
Huh. What was Aaron Judge doing? Not middle of May, but early May this season.
Is he going to get to September with playoff games?
No, I don't know what he's ultimately going to get to. But my point is, you're saying, hey, he's had a 47-game sample size. Maybe that's who he is. He had a 35-game sample size earlier this year, and half the people on this station and half the audience were like, ah, he's done. Evan, he's just not good. He must be hurt.
But this is why, like, all those numbers are fine, and I agree with what you're saying.
Thank you.
Here's the difference, though.
Go ahead.
Aaron Judge has played on arguably worse Yankee teams that made the playoffs, that made ALCSs, and he had a couple moments there, like you mentioned, and then a couple moments where he stunk. He might, going forward, we'll see what the future of the Yankees hold, play on worse teams that make the playoffs where he goes off in a division series, but they still lose the series because they have nothing around him. This path and this team for this Yankee team doesn't have time to wait for Aaron Judge to be early May Aaron Judge.
I agree, you don't have time.
The pressure is more now for him to get it done. So even if at the end of the career we look back at his postseason numbers, this is the one here, though. This is the October that the Yankees can't let themselves have an early exit, and a lot of that is on Judge.
I agree the pressure's on, because unlike every other year in the Aaron Judge era, and I've said this a lot to you, and now it is so obviously true, the Yankees weren't the best team going into October. We may have had that perception, but it was never true.
Right.
They were never the best team.
It's kind of like the Phillies in a way, right? They were the best team in the division, but they weren't playing the best going into the postseason.
Yeah, no, they weren't. You're right. They were pretty mediocre for a while. But I think when the Yankees made the playoffs in 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, they weren't the team to beat. They didn't have the best record any of those years. They do. They are the best team in the American League. Everyone agrees with it.
But they weren't playing the best.
No.
And that's the problem.
Yeah, but it always comes down to...
if that was the case, we'd talk about... It's Detroit.
Playing the best based on just a few weeks, sure.
Yeah.
It depends on when you want to make the sample size.
Right.
Do you want to make the sample size 3 months? Or do you want to make it a week and a half? It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo. The mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld at Odyssey Podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Evan and Tiki on the Fan. Big deal or no big deal? You tell me. Wide receiver Malik Nabers was seen partying at the Travis Scott concert the other night. He is still in concussion protocol. Oh. Is that a bad thing or it doesn't matter?
I mean, how loud is a Travis Scott concert?
Well, Loogie's been to many concerts in his life. Tommy, how loud is a Travis Scott concert?
Very loud.
Very loud.
Yeah, it's probably a bad thing.
It's a bad thing.
Yeah, because you're kind of just reverberating your brain a little bit more, and it's not what you want. I think the issue is that he hasn't been able to get over like the small things with that come with concussions, I'm going to assume, because he's been out there doing the drills, the football-specific drills, which is stage 3, but he hasn't gotten to stage 4 yet, which is practicing with a red jersey on. So you go out there, you're fine, you're symptom free, you practice, you can't get hit, and stage 5 is obviously full practice with no restriction. So he's got to be full practice with no restriction by, as Sean clarified for us, on Saturday, even though it's a BS practice.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got another day still to get through the fourth protocol, which would be tomorrow. The fourth level of the protocol, which is a red jersey practice before he has a full 5 non-red jersey practice on Saturday. But, I mean, if he's hanging out at a Travis Scott concert...
Not good?
Well, isn't he okay?
Well, has he been cleared?
I mean, I don't think you need to be cleared to go to a concert, but if you're hanging out, aren't you okay?
I would assume so.
I would assume so as well.
Now, Sean Morash and Tommy Lugau are the presidents of the Malik Nabers fan club. They never criticize them, so I'm curious if they're going to follow script here, or maybe this is your first sign of turning. Sean, we'll start with you. Are you mad at Malik Nabers?
Not mad yet. He asked me on Sunday night if he's not cleared concussion protocol and playing on the field.
So he better play. If he doesn't play, yeah. This is a problem.
Look, I've been to enough concerts as well, And I will just say this. It is probably, you guys thought it was loud at City Field, the loudest environment you will have. I mean, speakers are booming all around you.
Right.
And there are days I walk out of a concert, nights I walk out, and my head is still ringing the next morning. So that's without having a concussion. If you can't get through the protocol, I'm sorry, that you can't be going to loud places like that where it's reverberating, you waking up with headaches. That's a problem.
Mm.
I have no issue with him going to a concert. None at all. I don't care if he's in concussion protocol or not.
What if he's not clear and he doesn't play on Sunday?
I don't care.
You don't care?
I really don't, because I don't think it has anything to do with anything. I don't think him going to a concert has anything to do with... I don't think it makes a concussion worse. That's just me. Well, I never had a concussion. I just can't imagine like one has anything to do with that.
No, and that's why like I appreciate you offering an opinion. I'm going to be honest with you. I have no freaking idea. I've never had a concussion.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
My easy way out to... Well, you offered an opinion, so you said it's okay without even knowing if it's a big deal or not, which just shows you that you blindly defended him. I'm being honest by saying I have no idea. So what do you mean that's what I'm saying? We don't agree with each other. I'm raising my hand to say I've never had a concussion. I have no idea. You're saying, well, he did nothing wrong.
Well, I think I said both. I said I don't have an issue with it, and I also don't think it has anything to do with it because I don't really know about concussions.
You know what I put this
music
on? Here's my strong opinion on this. I'll give you a strong opinion. This is on the New York Football Giants.
What? Why? You got to tell them?
I'm not ripping them yet. Okay. I'm saying this is on the Giants because here's what I think you should do as an organization, and you tell me if teams do this or not.
Yeah.
Malik Nabers is 21 years old.
Right.
Okay. He is a wonderful athlete. He's also a really smart football player. I don't know what he knows about brain injuries. He probably doesn't know that much.
Yeah.
And so when there's an injury, and I'm talking about any kind of injury, what I would do, because I know nothing either, is I would ask my doctor, okay, what should I do and what should I not do? I would assume the Giant training staff, which is really good, you would certainly be able to testify for that.
They are, absolutely.
Would probably go to the athlete and the player and say, here's what you can do, here's what you can't do.
Yeah, but it's
and
also,
if they say it's okay, then I have no problem with it.
Man, do you remember when you were 21?
I do, yes.
And when you were in a city, or whatever, wherever you were living at that time, because I can speak to it specifically, because I was a rookie here, living in Jersey City in a big-ass apartment all by myself, and there were nights where you're just like, I'm just going to go do something.
Right.
Right? Someone, a friend or whoever, someone from college that I knew, I'm just going to go do something and go hang out. And how do you not go do that? You know what I mean?
Only if you're told not to.
Well, yeah, you're right. But
if my doctor on my sports franchise says, hey, this wouldn't be good for you, you're getting out of a concussion.
You've done your job right for the day. So you're at practice. It's different once you've had, you know, family and responsibility. It's because you go home and you're with your family. But when you're here by yourself and you're 21 years old and you got money in your pocket, how do you not go do something?
I understand that.
And so it's hard to be upset, I'll put that in quotes, upset with Malik Nabers. But if he's not clear and this has any way of causing setbacks, it's damaging to the team.
Yes.
Because it keeps him unavailable.
100%.
So I'm assuming that he's feeling better and that tomorrow he'll practice. Maybe it's got to be red jersey because I don't think he did that today. Is Sean still there? Is Sean, did he have that?
No, he did not. He's still in three.
So he's still in three. So tomorrow I would expect he's in red jersey day. And if he is, then this is a non-issue.
Nothing
burger.
If
he's not, then we probably got an issue.
Last night at Citi Field, the building shook. And for the first time since winning the pennant in 2000, which was a million years ago, the New York Mets partied and fans got to party celebrating a series victory. And the man who was on the call with some more brilliant calls was the voice of the New York Mets, Howie Rosen. He joins us courtesy of Bigelow Tea. Grab a mug and tea proudly. Howie, how are you feeling 24 hours later?
Hey, thanks, guys, but I think the vocal cords can use a few days right about now.
That is why we're
luckily
only,
you got it.
That's why we're taking you for like 8 minutes, and we're going to give you a break. I promise this is going to be one of those hour sessions.
Whatever you need, I'm here for you.
Is it surreal what this team has done? I know they've been great for a while, but like I'm standing there last night thinking, I can't believe we're witnessing this, and this is happening again. What was going through your mind as everything was going down?
Well, there was some of that, and I got to tell you what else I'm thinking, because, and this applies to you, Evan, and your entire generation, and even the one that, and I know you have a child, but it's also a little too early for him, I think, to really understand it all. But, you know, I've been talking about 1969 and 1986 forever. Mm. It's time for the younger generation of Mets fans to have a championship team they can latch onto and have the same kind of emotions 40, 50 plus years down the road that I do about the guys from the 69 team and the 86 team. all I could think of is, you know, I'm the old guy now, so I look to my right in the booth, and there's Keith Radd, and I got my daughters are in his age range.
Right.
And I look in the stands out in front of me, and so many of them, they're so young, and when it comes to Mets postseason baseball, inexperienced, that I want this for them as much as I want selfishly to be able to call a Mets World Championship, but moreover, it's for the fans and particularly the younger ones.
Now, I appreciate that, because I think that while we admire 86 and 69, mm-hmm. after a while, it's like, when do we get ours?
Right.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
True. I get it.
You know, does this feel magic to you, magical? Because I hate it as a former player saying, oh, it's destiny and there's just something here. But you hear it every week or all week this last week or so. There's just a magical moment, whether it was against Atlanta, whether it was against Milwaukee. It just feels like it just keeps happening.
Well, I'll take it back to the last time the Mets had been at Citi Field prior to this series, and that was that Sunday night game against the Phillies when Francisco Alvarez made a throw to third base that hit the third base back.
Right.
And 99 times out of 100 winds up either in left field or far enough away in foul territory that runner on third comes home, and I think that would have tied the game had that happened. But almost magically, it bounced right into, you know, Mark Vientos' glove. So I think every once in a while you see a play like that and you go, okay, maybe there's something going on here. But you don't really embrace that until after the fact. And the cold, hard fact is that this has been great, but they haven't won anything yet. I mean, they're going to the National League Championship Series, and that's phenomenal. And there's one more step to take after that. But that's still 8 wins and a long, long way off. However, you embrace getting to this moment, and I think more so than most, because it was so unexpected.
No question about it. We're talking to the voice of the Mets, Howie Rose. Yesterday's game was so frustrating for the first 5.5 innings.
Right.
When you look at all the blown opportunities that they had, and right before Lindor came up, it continued because Francisco Alvarez had a ground ball to shortstop, bases loaded, nobody out, same thing. They can't score a run. When Lindor came up, and it's so easy to say after the fact, but I swear I felt this way, I had this sense, okay, it's about to change now. Did you have that sense when Lindor came up?
Look, if you know me, no, I never do. You know? Yeah. Hey, I've lived these last 38 years with you too, you know?
Right.
So, you know, the thing I worried about, and I said this on the air, by the time the second inning was over and the game was scoreless at that point, you know, you leave the bases loaded twice in the first 2 innings. Both times they loaded the bases, it was before there were 2 out, you know. So you see those opportunities go by without cashing anything in. And then you say to yourself, I've seen this game 1,000 times before.
Yeah.
And you kind of get a feeling of how it's going to go. You just waited for the Phillies to have their crooked number inning. And, you know, the one run they got was unearned on the Vientos era, but you know, when they got out of that next inning, 1-0, I said, well, okay, at least I think they've got their sea legs back. And then Suarez looked like he was starting to find it a little bit. And again, you just hold out hope that from a Mets perspective, they can hang in long enough to maybe reawaken. And with all the opportunities, and some of them, you know, provided on almost with an engraved invitation, the way the Phillies bullpen was trying to get the Mets back into it again with the wild pitches and all. I certainly hope that Lindor would have done something that magical. Well, I don't know. I'm kind of you know, speechless at this point.
Howie, Evan always talks about the circle of trust when it comes to the Mets bullpen. Where are you at with Edwin Diaz? I felt watching at home, it's different, obviously, from being in the atmosphere, that he was working really fast. I know he always works fast, but this one felt really fast. And he was chomping on his gum like he couldn't, like you couldn't believe. And it was like he was anxious to just get it done.
That's a good point about working fast. But we mention that on the air all the time, that right. he's one of really a relatively few number of pitchers, at least to my estimation, that they just get the ball back and they're raring to go. That's
right.
Ben Edwards. So I didn't see him as being at a quicker pace last night than he had been earlier. But what I did see was the same sort of erratic result that's been all too frequent lately. So, yeah, I mean, there were some nerves there. And you know, he walks the first batter, and then you go, okay, well, settle in. And you know, he's throwing. It's not like he wasn't throwing his fastball. He wasn't locating his fastball. I didn't think he had a slider at all.
Right.
And so, you know, it became very evident as he was missing with the fastball, and I'm unable to get results with his slider for the most part, that he's going to have to start throwing that fastball for strikes and hope to find the same explosiveness that he did 2 years ago, because it's not, and I said this on the air, it's not about his velocity.
No.
It's about his location. It's about his command. But I'm telling you, he walks those first two, and then Cody Clemens comes up. He doesn't hit, if he doesn't get Clemens, he's out of the game.
I think so, yeah.
Stanek was ready.
Yeah.
And that would not have been a very tempting situation, because Diaz is still supposedly your guy. But luckily, he refocused. He started getting that fastball over, and thankfully, the results are what they were.
You know, I thought about this in the moment, and that was, why not just let David Peterson finish the job? And it's tough, because I know Edwin's the closer, and this is the guy, and if they're going to win the World Series, he's going to have to get big outs. Did you think about that? Do you think it would have been a good decision to keep David Peterson in the game the way he was thrown?
Given that he is stretched out and has been successful, and I know that you were getting down to the bottom of the order there, and the fact that if he faltered in the least, you could have Diaz ready to go. Yeah, I would not at all have minded if that's how it turned out. In fact, I remember thinking when they got out of the top of the eighth inning that I'm not so sure I wouldn't send Peterson out for the ninth. But I understand the way the game is played and managed 95% of the time right now. And Carlos said after the game that it was always going to be Diaz. And in all likelihood, it was, because Carlos is not going to share with us whatever level of doubt or consternation he might have had. But given the recent events, maybe the one thing that kind of tipped it in Edwin's favor is his dominance of Schwarber. Remember, he struck him out with a slider to get out of that, what was it, seventh inning, I guess,
in
game two. And he had been, I think it was 0 for 7 with 8 strikeouts going into that last at-bat against Schwarber. So, you know, they had that going for them. But it wouldn't have bothered me if I saw Peterson go out and start the ninth inning. But I don't think they wanted Diaz to come in with men on base either.
Right. What do you do moving forward with David Peterson? Do you use him as a weapon out of the bullpen?
Well,
how do you handle him?
He's a weapon, period.
Yeah.
And remember, you're going into a couple of seven-game series now. And, you know, the other at least quasi-weapon that they've got is Kodai Senga. Because everything I was hearing, and I'm curious how much more rope he might have had, but everything I'd been hearing, unofficially, of course, was that if they went to a game five, which would have been tomorrow night, it's a pretty good chance Senga was going to start that game. And they'd have probably piggybacked Peterson with him. But what happens in these short series is that when you've got a chance to, you know, finish the job, you adjust, and whatever creativity you've got to display, then you do that. And look at what Dave Roberts has been doing. Now, I've not been in contact or paying much attention over the last couple of hours because I've been running around doing a bunch of other things. I know Darvish is already named for San Diego tomorrow, but I was hearing before I went to do other stuff today that are they still thinking of another bullpen game tomorrow for the Dodgers?
Yeah. I mean, they may.
Seriously.
It's crazy.
With you get to two win-or-go-home games, and they're both bullpen games?
I know.
They've got Yamamoto good to go. They've got Flaherty good to go, don't they? On full rest.
Both would be on regular rest. They could start either guy. And I still assume they will. Like, if I had to guess, I think Yamamoto's starting. But Dave Roberts hasn't announced anything yet, so we don't know. We don't know what he's going to do.
I don't either. But, man, nobody likes bullpen games. The results may be favorable to the manager who puts one together on any given night. But, you know, I remember when that starting pitcher drove the gate and created the suspense before he even threw a first pitch.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of stuff has changed. But, man, two straight bullpen games as elimination games?
Yeah.
That's really something else.
What would you do with Jeff McNeil? I mean, it seems like he's close to coming back. Like, I guess what I'm kind of scared about is, am I just throwing him into the lineup? Who am I sitting? Is he a bat off the bench? Like, what would you do with Jeff McNeil if he's deemed ready?
Well, I think you have to consider the options and what would dictate getting Jeff back on the roster. Now, you look on one side of the ledger and you've got Acuna, who gives you the speed and the defensive flexibility and versatility on the infield. I know he's played center field. I don't see a scenario where that would happen during the postseason. Acuna's been a nice little weapon to have, but I think the one thing that would tip the scales in McNeil's favor, if there is any back and forth on this at all, is the fact that if you start and they've got right-handers, and well, I'm looking at the Dodgers anyway right now, you know, if you have Jesse Winker in the starting lineup as your DH, then you've got all right-hand hitters on the bench. And so I think the fact that they get an extra left-handed bat would be a benefit. And, you know, it is a bat that produced a batting title just 2 years ago. That's not a bad option to plug in either. So I think if they feel that they were able to get him however many at-bats in a couple of Arizona Fall League games, that might, as I say, work in Jeff's favor. So I think if they feel he's good to go, he'll be on the roster. That's my opinion. I don't know that from talking to anybody.
Do you have a preferred opponent? There's obviously a little bit of history with both. The Dodgers going back to the NLCS of 88, and obviously the division series that they played in 06 and 15. The Padres, it's recent. It's 2 years ago. But for you, maybe it's where you want to eat dinners. I don't know. Do you have a preferred opponent in the NLCS?
I have learned never to try to pick your dance partner. I think if the Padres and Dodgers want to rumble all night tomorrow night, that's great.
Yes.
And whoever gets through it, mazel tov. But I would not even dare imagine that one would be easier prey than the other, because at this stage, there is no easy prey. And when you start thinking you've got somebody's number, see Mets come in 1988, then, and then believe me, those guys, and I know a bunch of them, and two of them broadcast games for the Mets right now, they've never gotten over 88, and they never will.
No.
And so if you think that maybe there's some kind of connection where this would make up for that, no, totally different scenario. Same even with the Padres of 2 years ago, No. And obviously, you know, they're missing Musgrove now, and that's something to consider as well. But, hey, whatever those guys do to each other tomorrow night, take all night if you want to and make it as rough and tumble as you want.
That's right. We don't have those dopey extra inning rules, so go play a real 18-inning extra inning game. We'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Howie. Great call. The calls have been unbelievable. You are the perfect soundtrack to this October run, so thank you for that,
thank
Howie.
Thank you, Howie.
That's so nice of you both. Thank you. I appreciate it.
The great Howie Rose, courtesy of Bigelow Tea. Grab a mug and tea proudly. You hear Howie here on the Odyssey Mets Radio Network. Obviously, your opponent may dictate roster decisions. The L.A. Dodgers have two left-handers. That's it. They have Anthony Banda, a reliever. They have Alex Vesia, a reliever. That's it. The Padres have a few more. The Padres have four different lefties coming out of their bullpen, so that may dictate the Jeff McNeil decision. I'll tell you what I would do, and I'll get into this much deeper when I do a Rico Pronia later tonight. I'd put Jeff McNeil on the roster, but I wouldn't do it at the expense of Luis Angel Acuna. That's a mistake.
Who would you do it for?
Danny Young. Why is he even there? He never pitches.
Yes, good point.
He's pointless.
Great point.
He's literally, I think he's there if there's
hasn't
a blowout.
Hasn't even been a thought.
Hasn't been a thought.
Right, and you're not going to get those games where it's 8-0.
No, I mean, look, you may, and I understand the value of having a guy that you don't care about to just eat up innings because you don't want to waste valuable arms, but isn't that what Adam Ottavino's for? Like, you already have another arm who can eat up innings. So that's how I would handle it.
Right, and the way the breakdown is that you've been talking about with the scheduling, you don't, your bullpen gets rest.
Yeah. Yes. Now, the Yankees have had an inordinate amount of rest, but in the LCS, it's game, game, off day, game, 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 off day, game, game. So you never play more than 3 days in a row. And early on, it's only 2 days in a row. Yankee fans, how are we feeling and going in tonight? Will they seal the deal and finish the job?
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.